The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
Live from the Space Talk Radio Studios, it's The Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting live to seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy, here's the founder and host of The Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday Space Show program. It's great to be here. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get right into the program today and a couple of quick announcements. First of all, for those of you who will like to call the show today, that toll-free number, 1-866-687-7223. Remember, there are no call screeners. Let the phone ring until it can be answered. Be patient until we bring you up on the air. If you'd rather use email, dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, and thespaceshow@gmail.com. We're on the AOL family of instant messengers, so that means you get to use either IM, ICQ, or CompuServe. The screen name is all one word, Space Show Chat. Remember, if you want us to use another instant message program, send the request and we'll look into it. The Space Show is trademarked. It's a registered service mark and it's copyrighted by me. You do have permission to download the shows, burn them to a CD, a DVD, do what you need to help get the word out on spacefaring and whatever the subject of the particular show is. But remember, nothing commercial, and don't use any fancy software to go in and change or edit the text of any of the interviews. As always, we're appreciative to Andrew Grummet, G-R-U-M-E-T, at gigadial.net. They give us our podcasting service, which is extremely reliable. We're iTunes compatible. We're in Podcast Alley. You can find our RSS URL on our website, both of our newsletters. If you have any issues subscribing to it, send a note to drspace@thespaceshow.com and we'll see if we can't get your issues or problems resolved just as soon as possible. Here's a special announcement. One of our Space Show guests that is on frequently and a good friend, Pat Bond in Oklahoma City, has reminded me that the adventurer and pilot and truly great guy, Steve Fawcett, is still missing. You can help find him, and Pat sent me a website using Amazon's Mechanical Turk website. Now, I've been to the site. I don't yet know how to use it, but you can probably follow the instructions. Go to www.mturk.com and follow the instructions, and apparently you can help search a widespread area, being aerial photography or satellite photography, to see if you can't be helpful in locating it. He sent me another site that works as well, which is also an mturk.com site, but it's a pretty long URL. If you have a problem with the first one I gave you and you can't figure it out, email me, and I will email you the URL to this other site, because, again, it would take me all day to read it off, and it has a bunch of numbers and letters and stuff that long URLs have. But if you can be helpful, go for it. It's a worthy cause, and, you know, Steve Fawcett doesn't deserve to be lost wherever he is. And we wish him and his family great success in being found and still being with us. A couple of quick announcements. We have Space 2007 just around the corner. For those of you in and around Long Beach or planning to be down there, September 18th through the 20th, check it out at AIAA.org. In fact, our program today is going to talk about one of the agenda items at that conference, because the guests that are with us, we'll talk about the papers and the subjects that they're going to be in charge of and presenting. We'll get more on that in just a minute. Then go to Salt Lake City for October 19th through the 21st for the Space Word games. You know, this is a space elevator climber contest and much more. 20 teams, $1 million in prizes, some of it coming from your tax money. You might as well go see how your money is being spent. And you can check that out at www.spaceward.org. And then right now, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, there is a play that was written by actor Bill Pullman, who happens to be a big devotee of space, a space cadet, called Expedition 6. It's playing at the Magic Theater in Fort Mason in San Francisco now through, I think, maybe probably close to the end of the month. I don't exactly have that date. If you want to Google the Magic Theater, theater is spelled like it is in England. It's not spelled the way it is here in the United States. So make sure you spell it right. The play is Expedition 6, and Bill Pullman wrote it and directed it. It is about the Columbia shuttle accident and tragedy. And after that accident, Bill was really moved to do something about it. He wrote a play. I think it's been tested in some other markets. Right now it's active. I will be at the grand opening on the 15th, and I will certainly report back about it. But if you are in the Bay Area, I urge you to go see it. Also, please check the website newsletter this week. I'm working on getting an interview with Bill Pullman. It will be a last-minute thing, and I'll get an announcement up on the website if that interview comes to pass. And you'll definitely want to hear what he has to say about space. I've met him before. I've talked to him about space. And he's inspiring, to say the least, plus a really nice guy and a lot of fun. Okay, now we go to New Mexico, October 24th through the 27th, Personal Spaceflight Symposium, XPRIZE Cup, and you start out, the first 2 days are the symposium in Las Cruces, and then over the hill to Holloman Air Force Base we all go, and that's where the cup is being held in conjunction with the Holloman Air Force Base Air Show. Responsive Space, April 28th to May 1st in Los Angeles at the Westin Hotel, www.responsivespace.com. ISDC 2008, May 29th through June 1st, and that's in Washington, D.C. And then New Space by the Space Frontier Foundation 2008, also in Washington, D.C., July 17th through the 19th. Let me tell you about our show today. We have with us Melinda, or as she likes to be known, as Mel Marsh. She's a recent graduate of the University of North Dakota's Space Studies Department, where she has had the distinction of being seemingly the only social scientist in the department who was not a political scientist. She also was one of my students years and years back, an outstanding student, I might add. She produced a thesis on the identification of psychological stresses for long-duration spaceflight. Her undergraduate degree is in anthropology and human biology from Emory University, and she's planning to get her PhD in a field where she can work on the intersection of the social sciences and space. Mel is currently an officer in the National Association of Student Anthropologists and is a member of the Astrosociology Working Group of the AIAA, which, of course, is what we're going to be talking about today. Also with us, who you've heard many times before on the Space Show, Dr. Jim Pass. And he received his PhD in sociology in 1991, and it's okay that he went to USC. We still take him in on the show for that faux pas. But he has a specialty in deviance. I guess at USC, Jim, you probably had a lot of subjects to study, right? You can all tell I still dig USC whenever possible. He became increasingly uninterested about the topic as he neared graduation, but he has been interested in sociology and space exploration probably forever. Like the rest of us, he finally put the two together after reading Alan Tuff's web article entitled Positive Consequences of SETI Before Detection, in which he made a comment about creating something called social astronomy or astrosociology. Jim's immediately purchased the domain astrosociology.com and began the 8-month-long development of the definition and purview of astrosociology. The website is absolutely golden. I urge all of you to visit it. It has great information on it. He is currently working full-time toward the development of astrosociology. He's a consultant to Four Frontiers Corporation. He's on the editorial board of Astropolitics, and he is making progress in the development of astrosociology, but it's a kind of a strong, tough, uneven course due to the indifference and criticism of the entrenched leaders in this academic community. Where have we heard that before about entrenched leadership in the status quo of an academic community? I can keep reading about Jim. I'd rather not. His full bio is on the website, and he's been on the show before, and it's always a pleasure to welcome him back. So Mel and Jim, welcome back to the show. How are you?
We're doing good. Thanks for having us.
It's always an honor, even though you're a Trojan, Jim. I just, you know, I guess that's going to be with you be with you forever, right?
Yeah.
Luckily, I'm not.
No, you're not. You're, I guess, a fighting Sioux, Mel, right?
Yep.
Until the AIAA, I guess it's not the AIAA, it's whatever the Athletic Association is, and I've lost it, I'm getting a senior moment, forces UND to change their name because it's politically incorrect, and they will no longer soon be known as the Fighting Sioux. They'll probably be known as the Fighting Pink Ladies or something. They'll probably like that name better. Enough of my political stuff. Jim,
yes.
Start us out, because we have lots of new listeners in lots of new cities and places, especially people outside the country. Astrosociology 101, your website, and what you're going to be talking about at AIA Space 2007. Actually, a lot of listeners will be at all or part of that conference, as I'm hearing by people from email.
Okay. Astrosociology is the study of the intersection between, human behavior or humanity and space. And so it's an area that, you know, we've not really touched on before because, sociologists, for example, have tried to implement it in the past and failed. And I think it's working now because now we're starting to be more serious about going into space in terms of colonization or settlements or what I call creating space societies. The social sciences were developed on Earth because we needed to understand human behavior. And if we go into space, we're going to have to do the same thing. There's going to be a lot of challenges that are not engineering in nature, but will be actually behavioral. And we're going to need to work with the space scientists and the engineers and the architects and so on in order to make, space colonization or space societies possible and successful on a long-term basis. Astrosociology, another way of looking at it is what I call the study of astrosocial phenomena, which are social and cultural patterns related to space. But if you look at the other social sciences and you look at it as a multidisciplinary field, then we're actually talking about various aspects of behavior, including psychological and social psychological variables, as well as sociological variables. So it's a big purview. There are a lot of specializations possible, and we'll talk about those in sociology. There's a lot of positions to fill in the future, I think, in these areas.
Just a minute ago, you said a lot of academics, although that wasn't your word, I guess, sociologists have tried to implement something at the crossroads of sociology to space but have failed. I'm wondering what they would have tried to implement and failed. But first, a very, very quick correction. At the first of the show, when I announced the URLs to try to help find Steve Fawcett, I attributed it to friend and listen and space show guest Pat Bond. I made an error. This is coming from Andy. Their IM screen names are very, very similar. I made the mistake. We thank Andy for this information and for these URLs. And Andy, I apologize for getting it wrong. Okay, Jim, what would they have tried to implement and not be successful with?
In sociology, which I'm familiar with, of course, is there have been attempts to create the so-called sociology of outer space in the past. I wouldn't say there have been a lot of people that tried it, but I'm aware of at least two attempts in the past, and they got nowhere, and they basically gave up after a couple of years. So astrosociology has already come further than any other attempt in the past. That's why I'm hopeful that we can continue to develop it. And the interesting thing about Space 2007 and the space conferences in general and all the AIAA conferences, as well as, you know, any conference that's not social science-oriented, is the fact that the other branch of science, you know, the natural sciences, which are usually working in space, are starting to see the merits of the social sciences, which wasn't really the case in the past. And that's helping a lot.
Quick question, just flew in on email from Roger in San Antonio, and he says, state the reason why we would care about sociology intersecting with space or developing sociology for space. What's in it for the space community or for humanity? Why does this make a difference?
Well, for example, you know, people kind of downplay this, but you know, technology transfers and spin-offs are important for our standards of living, are important for our medical care in terms of its technological improvement over time. And it's important to understand what is really going on there and how that applies to everyday social life. That's an area that we study in the social sciences in terms of other areas, but we don't really tie space to social life on an everyday basis, and we need to do that. Another example would be one of the papers that I'm going to present is really a theoretical paper. It's called Shifting from Spaceports, from Airports to Spaceports, and it's looking at social change in the future. And this paper was written or co-authored by Al Harrison, who's been on your show several times. And we basically looked at a theoretical model of the ideal type of spacefaring society in which we theorized what it would look like based on certain types of logical trends that we see going in the future. And it's important to do that on a theoretical basis, because then as we advance as a society, or any society advances, we can compare, you know, where we are today compared to what the ideal type is like. And we offer 24 mileposts, and the shift from airports to spaceports is not until number 18. And, you know, we've actually done, you know, we've passed through some of the mileposts, like the first successful unmanned satellite, the first manned satellite, robotic missions to the moon and nearby planets, and so on. So we've accomplished some of these mileposts, but there are others in the future. And when we look at a space-faring society as something in which every social institution is somehow tied into space. And space is an everyday phenomenon in society, as opposed to something that is looked at as something separate from everyday social life. So some a very different reality, social reality, than what we're used to. So those are a couple examples. And another example would be space settlement. You know, you can have the best habitat in the world, and it can, you know, function, the physical environment can function for 10 years, but you can put in people into that environment, and they will create a social environment. And if they're not able to get along with each other, that mission can fail, even if the engineering works over time.
And this is true even if there's only four or five people in the capsule headed to Mars.
Right. And it's better to have more people.
Mel, go ahead.
It even starts when there's only two or three.
Mel, what got you interested in this subject? This is not your PhD field, and so how did you come to astrosociology and then getting connected with the working group?
Which one were you asking?
You.
Me?
Yes.
Well, I haven't started my PhD yet, but when I was younger, I've always been interested in space, and I actually felt that I always wanted to do with my life. Unfortunately, I found out that I wasn't necessarily the best in mathematics. So for a long time, I was actually very depressed because I felt I couldn't do anything. But when I went off to college, I found anthropology. I fell in love with the subject. And, I still constantly had dreams of, doing something in space. And it didn't, it wasn't until, a few years later when I applied to grad programs, I had already seen the UND website. And I always said, maybe I'll apply one day. And I applied, and this is how it turned out for me. I realized that, I really could do something. They actually have some social scientists there, mostly political scientists-type people and historians. But I was very much encouraged to do something with anthropology and space. And when I was searching around for ideally a PhD program where I could do something related, I somehow, I'm not even sure what the exact keywords in, I typed in, I found Jim's website and, started basically joining and interacting immediately. Like within a few months, I found myself on the working group. So that answered the question of how I got connected. And I figured this, since I now realize that I'm not the weirdo and that there are other people like me out there, that the social scientists could conceivably, really have an impact in space, I would like to continue with this because it's a skill that I have the skills to do it. At least I hope I have the skills to do it. And I definitely have the interest.
I've said many times on the show that space gets the focus of the engineering and the scientist and the technical guys for everything from what we're talking about right now to regulatory and policy making, as well as to what genuinely has to be engineering, has to be technical, has to be science. Even on the business side, there are far too few political scientists and sociologists and liberal arts humanities people involved in the actual processes of taking us into a spacefaring culture and economy. So I know that we're the sort of the poor kid on the block next to the rocket engineers and all the techies, but I think that the more we can have a voice, and I include myself in this because I'm not an engineer or a scientist. I'm a business guy, but my undergraduate work was all political science and history. The more we can have a voice and reach out to people and talk to people differently so that they understand us, the more likely that becoming spacefaring is going to be facilitated. So I think this work is really crucial. And I guess to either of you, how successful is astrosociology in terms of going into the general population base, the general community? Is there any dialogue? Is there any way for what you're talking about at AIAA to be part of the general community talk about why we should go back to the moon, why we should support NASA, why we should go on to Mars or be space tourists? Are we making it into the general public yet?
I my second paper that really leads right into it at space is about enhancing the STEM model by adding astrosociology to it, or basically adding a social science component
to the STEM model. Tell people what STEM is; they may not know.
Yeah, that's the in education. That's what a lot of educators are pursuing at this time, and it's basically a focus on subjects dealing with the natural sciences, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And so, basically we're looking at a model that excludes the entire social science branch, and so, you know, luckily when I was in my last three classes, when I was teaching at Long Beach City College, I gave an optional final exam question, which was basically just an option. They had two; they could answer two questions: one about social inequality and one about astrosociology. And I basically asked them if they would be interested in taking an astrosociology course and why. And I asked them to go to my website ahead of time just to look at it and what it's about. And I received a response out of 45 students who did respond to that question. 80% said that they would take a course in astrosociology, intro to astrosociology. And only 3 said they would be uninterested, totally uninterested in the subject. So, you know, that kind of shows that there is an interest in at least if this pilot study is correct, in the general population of students, because this was at a community college. Students have, you know, trouble taking the subjects that they need and the courses they need in order to graduate, so they don't want to take extra ones that they don't need. So it's interesting that most of them actually said they would take a course. And I think it kind of mirrors the general population, the interest in space and the general population. So I think there's a lot of interest out there.
Let me ask you a question, and Mel, I want to hear from you on this too. Can you make astrosociology address a major, major issue that is kind of a barrier to going forward with space, and that is public sector versus private sector, a leadership crisis in both communities, and reforms that would be needed in both communities to facilitate moving toward a spacefaring culture and economy? Do you think astrosociology is a major component that could contribute to solutions to that kind of situation that I just described in that one-line sentence?
I would say that those types of issues are in, you know, under the purview of astrosociology. You know, it involves any social science or any social scientific perspective about any pertinent subject about space and society or space and humanity. So I would say yes, that those who are interested in that area of study would be the ones who would, you know, write those types of papers, bring up those kinds of issues, do those studies. And I think, you know, that there's nothing wrong with that because it falls right into the purview of astrosociology.
How to sort of bring those two sectors into more harmony and how to establish effective leadership that facilitates the development of both communities?
Exactly. You know, it's really a balance of the two in the future. That, you know, right now, NASA is the one, you know, the one proven part of society or the organization in society that can actually get into space on a regular basis. So, you know, as soon as the private sector gets to that point, and NASA is trying to help them along, then, you know, I think in our society, at least, we're going to see a relationship develop there, and we're going to see both do their own thing in terms of their priorities.
Mel, how do you see that?
I completely agree with Jim. This is definitely an important area. I mean, if we are going to discuss, you know, private versus public, that's very much a part of the social sciences. Two separate groups. You want to get these guys together and hopefully agree on a good situation. And so if it involves people, which it does, private versus public, then it certainly does. And there are actually a few books that just discuss, you know, culture at NASA and how risky it is. The exact title has now left my brain. And that was, I think that was written by an anthropologist, just right there discussing about that. That would be also relevant.
There's another one also by a sociologist, by Diane Vaughan, and I'm trying to think of the name of it. I went blind myself. But it talks about, yeah, it's called The Challenger Launch Decision. And it talks about the culture of NASA and what the problems, you know, in terms of taking risks versus, you know, doing more things that are more safety conscious. And so, you know, there have been some studies done in the past. Also, it's important to remember that a lot of people like Ben Finney and Alan Tuff and Al Harrison have been doing astrosociology, in a sense, without the title of the field for a long time. So social scientists have always been interested in the area to some extent, but they haven't been contributing in terms of working in the same field, so they can put together a well recognized body of knowledge and literature. But you know, you can find those kinds of works out there.
Okay, well, Jim, you don't know it, but you just volunteered to be a guest speaker at my UND class this semester, so I'll tell you about that off-air. But now you're going to get a chance to bring astrosociology to space studies at UND, and Mel can tap into that class through the class website and all of that. But you're going to get a chance to speak about that, and I'll tell you about that off-air. And everybody, we're going to take our first break right now. We're going to be gone a little bit longer than 2 minutes, not much longer. I'm going to reconnect a phone line with Mel to see if I can clear up some phone line noise. So everybody, be patient. Stay where you are. We'll be back with our two guests, Dr. Pass and Mel Marsh, in just about 2 minutes, maybe a few seconds past that. Don't go anyplace.
Generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to The Space Show is tax deductible.
Welcome back, everybody. This is The Space Show. I'm your host, David Livingston. Our guests today are Jim Pass and Mel Marsh, and I'm working on getting Mel connected to the telephone. You'll hear me dialing probably in the background. But Jim, one of the things I wanted to make sure that listeners know about, because again, many of us are going to be at Space 2007 in Long Beach, what is your actual agenda there?
Glad you asked. We are going to be presenting three sessions on the 20th, which is Thursday, the last day of the conference. And, you know, I realize that the AIAA conferences, including the space conferences, are always interesting and offer a lot of diversity. But I think for those of you who are even mildly interested in something a little different, I encourage you to check out at least one of our sessions. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, because I think we have a lot of diverse and interesting papers. We did have one session last year at Space 2006, and it was well attended, and so I think this one will be the same. And so with three sessions, that means that we're going to be offering 12 papers, and we have a whole variety of different topics that are going to be addressed, including, like I said, spacefaring societies and the idea of education, astrosociological education. But we also have other things. We have papers about, you know, a space-based civilian workforce, for example, by Ron Cole. And an interesting one that we have is going to address the idea of children in space. So, you know, that's something that we have to consider as well, and what the conditions in space will do to, you know, to the development of fetuses and to the growth of biological growth of children. And so, you know, these issues are something that we have to talk about, and they're going to be different in different gravity environments. So we have a lot of different topics, 12 different papers, as I said. And I'm really happy about this because it basically gives astrosociology a pretty big stage. Our sessions are going to last from 10 o'clock until 6 o'clock. So it's a full day. And at 7 o'clock, we have a meeting of the Society and Aerospace Technology Technical Committee. And the meeting is open to all who are interested. And within the meeting, that's our basically our host, TC, our technical committee. There will be an astrosociology working group agenda, you know, within the meeting. And it gives people, listeners and others, a chance to participate in astrosociology's development. I think it's important for people who are interested in space but may not be interested in pursuing that kind of research from, you know, a natural science or engineering perspective, to kind of check it out and see if they would be interested in doing it from, you know, a sociological or anthropological, psychological, or what have you, perspective instead.
This is a big plus in the number of papers presented in the length of the program at AIAA from last year, correct?
Yeah, last year we had 4 papers, and this time we have 12, so that's a big increase. And also, I want everybody to know that these papers will be posted to the virtual library at my site, so they'll have a chance to read them all, too, if they can make it to the conference, or even if they can and they want the reference.
And do you know which track you are? I mean, do we have to, which day and which track? How do we find you? Because they've got so many tracks going over so many days.
Yeah. I haven't really looked at the schedule yet, so that's something that I'm not really familiar with. But I could let you know the title of our sessions, and that would be something to look for.
Okay, what is the title of the sessions? Is the whole session called an astrosociology track, or what would they look for the major name of the track?
You know, again, that's something I don't know at this point. But, you know, one thing you could do on the site is if you look at it with a browser, you can basically find it by looking up the word astrosociology. You know, you'll find it in the menu. But they're all called astrosociology. One's called Astrosociology 1, Theory and Research. The second one is Astrosociology 2, Space and Society. And the third one is Astrosociology 3, Space Travel and Settlement. So that, you know, they all have astrosociology in the title. So it should be easy to find for that in that regard.
Do you normally get people from the hard sciences coming into these tracks? Is there a crossover from what you've found in the engineering and the science world into an interest in this world?
Yes, I think there are some engineers and space scientists who are interested. In fact, in our working group, we have some people from JPL and other NASA centers. So there are some people that are interested in, you know, pursuing their own line of work, so to speak, but also interested in working with social scientists in order to, you know, kind of further space exploration. You know, I look at something that I've termed the astrosociological imperative, and basically what that is if we want to move into space and explore space in terms of doing so with humanity as opposed to machines, then we're going to need social scientists involved. Otherwise, it won't be possible because you need social scientists to do social science. You can't have engineers doing that, just like social scientists can't do engineering. You need somebody trained in those areas.
I'm trying to get Mel back on the phone as we're talking. That's why we're having some trouble with telephones with her line. Do you see a way for this field to I guess transcend is the word I'm looking for, because, for example, you're primarily the number one guest I have on this show doing this subject, and while we do it a couple of times a year, it doesn't really seem to come up a lot. I'm trying to figure out a way to get it to be larger. Do you think it's because of the terminology of the discipline? What do you think it is that seems to not be as is it just because space is more interesting for engineers? Are we fighting kind of a battle against competing thoughts with the engineering sciences?
Well, I think you know, there's problems in both branches of science. So as to sociology, I'm taking a three-prong attack in developing it. Within the social science community, you have kind of a large-scale indifference, and you have the gatekeepers, and those are entrenched in their fields, their subfields, I should say, protecting those fields, you know, because if you think about it, if astrosociology becomes viable and it becomes recognized and popular, it's going to be taking away some of their dollars from their subfields. And so there's a real need for those people, from their own perspectives, to hold on to that research money and so on. Within the space community, for 50 years, the social sciences haven't really been part of space exploration, except for some psychology and so on, but not in a big way. And so, you know, they've been able to further space exploration to the point we're at now without a lot of social science. But I think that's going to change, as I said. You know, if we go into space in terms of long-duration space flights or colonization or settlement, then that's going to change everything. If we work in space, if we have space hotels, people stay in space longer times, or they work in space permanently, there's going to be differences that arise between the last 50 years and the next 50 years. And then the third prong would be the collaboration between the two branches of science, getting the two to work together to further space exploration.
So,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's a long, tough road going from nothing to trying to establish a field that's accepted by both of these branches of science when each one thought that it can get along without astrosociology all this time.
What about within the multidiscipline world of NASA? How is astrosociology considered there? And I think, Mel, are you with us?
Finally. Is this any better? This is my third line in this house.
We're going to make it do. No, it's not really that much better, but don't budge. It's too hard to find another line that works. So
now it looks like I'm going to have to talk to my cell companies, because I know the cell works and I know my other line does work too.
Well, your other line is call forwarded to your husband's cell phone, so he keeps answering, and your
it hasn't been ringing here, so I don't answer.
Well, it's automatically forwarding, and your cell says it's not a real number. Thank you, AT&T. All right. Jim is about to tell us the state of astrosociology within the domains of NASA hallways.
I think right now, well, sociology itself has always been something disdained by NASA, I think, for a long time. Marilyn, Dudley Rowley, or Dudley Flores?
Right, correct. They've both been on the show before.
Yeah. Well, she basically, wrote a thing about the Great Divide, which was this idea of the separation between sociology and aerospace. And there's always been this idea that if you're a sociologist, you're not even allowed to participate in the space program, especially as an astronaut. Canada, not even allowed to apply. So, there's a lot of disdain for sociology, and psychology has been more accepted. human factors is based on a lot of psychological research and so on. So there has been some psychology, but otherwise it's not really, it hasn't really been big. But I think now, you know, some people like Pete Worden at Ames Research Center are more open to the social and psychological and cultural issues than they've been in the past. And so I think now there's a good chance for NASA at some point, maybe not right away, to recognize astrosociology as a viable field. And that would be something that would really change things. If NASA actually looked at it as something that was helpful to them.
Mel, I have a question I've been saving to get you back on the air, and I just see that you're going to yell at Vonage. Is that the company that you were using when you were on freeconference.com?
Yeah, that's the only thing that we have.
So
Vonage in singular.
If I had known that, I would have done a workaround. So let me again say this for Space Show listeners. A VOIP phone for any radio show, not just the Space Show, is unacceptable audio quality. It is compressed down so much that most of the data of the call is missing. And a regular telephone handset is so lousy, you can't tell the difference. But when that call comes into radio equipment that is really precise and is working with that call to make it crystal clear, it has a real problem because the data was never there. It is a compressed digital file, compressed even further down than an MP3. Most radio shows will not allow a VOIP call into their system. So had I known that, I would have done a workaround with you in advance to bypass that entire problem. Now I understand why your audio on Free Conference was so poor. Listeners, do not use VOIP when you're calling the Space Show or being a guest. You're better off using a cell phone or a cordless phone, because at least there the data is there. It just may come in with static. So I just had to get that out there, because this is a real issue for audio quality on a radio show. But Mel, here is the
question. I'm calling you on my cell phone too, but you're not picking up.
Well, it's okay. Listen, here's a question from Wayne in Tucson. And Wayne says, I'm really curious to know, when you were in the programs and you were on the humanities liberal arts side, did you feel that the programs were biased against you and against your educational background as you wanted to study space and do things in space? Is the system itself rigged in favor of the science and the engineer, or do you think you were at a level playing field within the system?
We are talking about UND, correct?
Well, whatever your academic experiences have been.
Okay, well, I know during some situations over at UND, I did kind of feel like I was the bit of the outcast, I suppose. And in some cases, it really was biased towards the sciences, people who had a more scientific background, which I didn't really have. Well, not nearly as much as the people with the degrees in physics or the degrees in geology or whatever. But we found, you know, eventually I got to the point where I realized I really was on a level playing field, because they were just as confused in the more humanity type, you know, social science type classes. Although they tried to avoid taking those for lots of various reasons. I have no fear. I will take any class you want to give me. So yeah, there was some bias, but and I just graduated from UND, like August. So, but and so from 2004 to 2007, and I think it's getting better.
Well, I hope so, because again, I think that this is an important component of having a rounded space economy. I mean, if we look at our economy the way it is now and the opportunities for people, there are clearly opportunities across the board, not just in the hard sciences and in the engineering fields. So why should space be any different? I know we need the engineering and the hard sciences to get us there, but we're people nonetheless. And we need to have, the other stuff going along with us at the same time. Mel, are you going to be able to make it to Space 2007 and participate?
Nope. I have no money.
They have a great student rate. And by the way, talk to me. They have a scholarship program. When I did a program with AIAA about 2 weeks ago, they said basically for high school and college students that they have a program to bring them out there. So let me put you in touch with the people, and you can say you heard about the scholarship program on the Space Show and see if they make it available to you.
Well, thanks.
So I'll do that.
I'd like to do that myself. You know,
you don't count. You live in Southern California.
No, yeah, for this one. But I mean, to have somebody come out, you know, I'd love to be able to afford to do that. But at this point, there isn't any money in the country of sociology. You know?
Well, let me ask you, and then we're coming up on another hard break. Do people have to join Astro Sociology to get the information off your website? Is it freely available? Do you have a newsletter? What can people do to stay in touch?
Right now, we have two kind of things going on. One is to be a member, and to be a member means you basically provide membership dues as a kind of a donation to help Astro Sociology keep going. And there's another option, which is supporter level, which gets all the same information, and you know, all you have to do is email me at jpass@astrosociology.com, and I will put you on our mailing list, and you'll be privy to all the calls for abstracts and papers and all the information, all the announcements that go out. There's not necessarily a newsletter at this point because, you know, I'm doing most of the work myself, as well as work, you know, writing papers for conferences and so on. So, you know, it's kind of a busy time right now, but I definitely will send out the information as conferences come up and we need people to fill slots in our sessions and so on.
Everybody hold it right there. We're going to take our next break, and we will make up for the lost time while fiddling around with phone calls and losing mail, so don't worry about that. This show will be the original length it is always intended to be. But we'll be back this time, I promise, in 2 minutes. Our guest today, Dr. Jim Pass and Mel Marsh.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality.
Welcome back, everyone. This is The Space Show. I'm your host, David Livingston. Our two guests today, Mel Marsh, a recent graduate from UND Space Studies Program and a new member to the Astrosociology Working Group, which is part of AIAA, and Jim Pass, who I believe, Jim, would it be fair to say you're the founder of all of this with AIAA?
Yeah, I think I probably...
You get the title.
Got it going. But, you know, I would say you could say I'm maybe the founder of Astrosociology, but we had a small group of people that actually helped with it.
Last year we had you had sort of a snack, candy, sort of evening meeting that lasted for a couple of hours to plan a lot of the astrosociological events coming up for the year or the near future. Are you doing that again, and are interested people invited to be part of that?
Yes. Actually, this time we're going to have an actual dinner meeting. And it's going to be, we have our third and hopefully final sponsoring technical committee, Society and Aerospace Technology Technical Committee. They're going to have their regular TC meeting, and they're going to have, they're basically sponsoring our working group, and they're going to have Astrosociology Working Group issues on the agenda. So, not only can you go there and listen to people actually developing astrosociology, but you can actually get a free dinner as well.
And how do we find out about it? Will there be signs, or is it part of the agenda, or you announce it in the sessions? Excuse me?
Yeah, we'll have the details in the sessions, and also it should be in the program.
Okay. Mel,
you're... 7 o'clock that evening, on Thursday the 20th.
7 p.m. Thursday the 20th,
yeah,
okay.
I don't know the room yet.
But it'll be in the Long Beach Convention Center someplace.
Or in the hotel,
okay. Mel, I mentioned that you're about to start a PhD program. What do you actually want to do your PhD in? Is it going to be in the humanities side on something like astrosociology? Are you going to continue with anthropology? Or what are you going to do with it, and what are your career plans?
Well, first, I'm not actually in a PhD program. I would eventually like to be in a PhD program. I think I intimidate a lot of people because nobody's quite sure what to do with me. I mean, do I go into a space type program? Do I go into an anthropology program? They're all a little bit. I'm not entirely sure how they see me. I think I scare a lot of people because I am so different. I'm not entirely sure what I really should be even applying under. I mean, astrosociology is, very new. No one's quite sure where to put it. I'm not sure if I would be best going into some form of interdisciplinary program, as in, like, some self-designed PhD, which I know some colleges do have. And I would like to go into either the space industry when I'm done, and or just go into academia, or both.
Al Harrison, who Jim has referenced a few times, was on the show promoting his new book about 2 weeks ago, and he had just come from the huge APA meeting in San Francisco, and he said there were several papers on space and space astrosociology issue delivered at this conference, which shows that it is going mainstream if it was a part of the APA meeting. So I thought that was pretty good news. Did you hear, were you at that conference, Jim?
No, I wasn't at that one, but that is good news, because at the ASA, the sociological one, we haven't had anything like that kind of success. But we have at the regional meeting, which is, I guess, the way that we're going to get it entrenched in sociology and then move into the ASA at the time.
Mel, do you think
I'm trying to get a formal session, in terms of what they call a special session designation, so that we can have an astrosociology session. But it's much more difficult. the funny thing is it's more difficult to get it established in sociology than it is in the space community. So, you know, it's kind of surprising.
The status quo can be a real tight knot around things, as you know, Jim.
Right.
Mel, you're working with Vadim at UND, who's also been on this show and who is probably my favorite physicist from Russia. Is just a great guy. How does the astrosociology aspect of your work blend in with his hard physics? I mean, he's a real special guy. I understand that. But how does that work and work with his students?
Actually, we don't discuss physics at all because one of his areas was more humanities work. Like, I'm not sure if you know this, but he has been in more extreme environments than apparently anyone has a right to ever be.
Yes, I am aware of that. Yeah.
Well, so he actually is teaching a class in human performance in extreme environments, which came out of his human factors course, which I think I influenced the creation of this course and the following course. So yeah, we don't discuss too much physics because I'm not so much good in math. But he does want to include mathematical modeling in some of our later work. But I told him he can do the math because I'm not going to do it.
Well, if you do the PhD in this, I assume you're going to be introduced to some pretty high-level statistical analysis, so you might as well get the mindset for it.
Yeah, that's part of it.
I can do some statistics, just not what he's suggesting, because I think he's speaking in another language. Actually, half the time he is speaking in another language, so it really doesn't help. He's speaking in two foreign languages at the same time. My Russian's not that good.
I have to get him back on the space show. He is a wealth of amazing cross-discipline information. Jim, what about your alma mater at USC? I poke fun at it all the time, but are they open to astrosociology and specialty degrees or sub-degrees in the field?
I think they're totally traditional at this point. I've written some of my professors, and they haven't responded, so I think they're not really interested in pursuing anything related to space.
Let me tell you another story that kind of relates to this. Because this is, I think this is a real problem in developing space, because we so very, very well need the humanity side of everything. So I have been promoting, first of all, I'll read this. This is from John in Billings. Vadim is a biophysicist. He's not the standard physicist. Boy, that is for sure. He is a real unique guy and a terrific guy. Thus, he has an interdisciplinary type in the borderland between physics and the biomedical sciences and in other disciplines, too. Thank you, John. Vadim is a very, very special and unique professor, and I think UND is absolutely very, very fortunate to have this guy on their department, and anyone who takes his classes is really fortunate to have his impressions on them. But we need
this. He's more entertaining when he does backflips downhill. That's great. If you haven't seen it, ask him to do it next time you're up.
I have not asked him. I'm still working on getting a ride in the pressure chamber with the good comrade, so we'll see how he does on that one. But listen, seriously, we're missing this balance on the humanity side of things in space. And so space is not really mainstream, everybody's general word. You don't see it in political priorities. You don't really see it. I get Talkers Magazine, which is the Bible of the talk radio industry, and they have this ranking each month where it comes in, topics at the water cooler. We're never in the top 10, 15, 20 unless something tragic happens or something big happens, like a flyby of Cassini of Saturn or something like that. And then they have these other categories. Nothing related to space is in there, short of a catastrophe or, you know, something really unusual happening. So I'm promoting this Bill Pullman event to a lot of friends and people in the Bay Area, both verbally, by telephone, and email. So everybody knows who Bill Pullman is. I don't have to say to anybody who Bill Pullman is. They all know, you know, Fort Mason, which is where the event is, and Expedition 6 is the name of his play. So almost everybody I promote this to says, oh, Bill Pullman, you're going to get him on your show. You're going to get to talk to him. Tell him I'm in the 100 Club. And I'm saying, what the hell's a 100 Club? Okay, the 100 Club is they've seen Sleepless in Seattle at least 100 times. Okay, I'm being really serious about this. So I'm thinking, okay, even the guys are telling me they're in the 100 Club. You know, and this ranks in with Dirty Dancing and a couple of other movies where people say they've seen it 100 times. Okay, one email comes in from a guy and says, you got to talk to him about his line in the great space movie he was in where he said the path to everything is space, and he was president of the United States. This, of course, is Independence Day, and he was the president of the United States. And one person out of, it's a real small sample size, so it's totally insignificant, 20 people, say 25 people, one person mentions his space movie and his line, the path to everything is space, which he says as the president of the United States. Everybody else, I'm in the 100 Club for Sleepless in Seattle. When space can match the romantic expectations or whatever those expectations are of a Sleepless in Seattle, we're going to be a lot better off. There's no science, there's no engineering, there's no math in Sleepless in Seattle, right? It's just a silly romantic comedy that obviously caught on. This shows you how imbalanced this is, and while this is kind of a stupid analogy that I'm using, I agree with that. The fact that it's so lopsided, and everybody who's communicating with me saw Independence Day, and yet there's no reference to space, his lines as president, what he said about space. It's all, I'm in the 100 Club. Make sure he knows that. I mean, that to me says it all about what you're talking about today, Jim and Mel.
Yeah, you know,
I haven't seen that.
one of the important things that we have to do is get astrosociology into the educational organizations around the country, you know. Even if it's just an intro to astrosociology course, or it's somebody mentioning astrosociology as a subfield in sociology or anthropology or whatever it is, I think once we get the humanities and the social sciences, the behavioral sciences, you know, talking about space, and students start to see the connections that we really don't see on an everyday basis due to, you know, engineering, you know, we see the products of engineering and the products of space science, but we don't tie them to the culture, we don't tie them to society, and that's the problem that we have right now. I think astrosociology can feasibly do that if we give it a chance. Get it into these programs is a different story.
But. I think we need to get it in even at the undergraduate level. We need to really, have it, just become available as mainstream, as popular, as a legitimate field. I mean, we are, you know, if we can focus our humanities and liberal arts on the nonsense of something, we can surely find a way to figure out how to focus humanities and liberal arts on the path that can make a huge difference for us right here on Earth. You need to have long tentacles, Jim and Mel.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of time to get this really off the ground in a big enough way. But I think just perseverance can potentially do it. And, you know, I think one of the things that I see is, I've run across several students who have basically, you know, ended up in Mel's position where, you know, they want to do a thesis or they want to do a dissertation on astrosociology, but their faculty won't let them. They don't see it as relevant. They don't see it as important, to their
dissertation. Whoa. Their dissertation topic is turned down because it's in astrosociology?
Well, let's say they're motivated to go in another direction. You know, it's downplayed in terms of. I haven't heard one person yet say who said that they were interested in doing that, actually achieving it.
My topic was a very long struggle just to get through that, and that wasn't specifically, you know, into some hard astrosociology topic. It was, you know, something that is actually sort of something else. You know, it's more into psychology because I was just doing psychology, but it was a very long line to get that approved because it got turned down a number of times, not by my advisor but by the department chair.
Who was the department chair at the time? Was that Sean?
Uh-huh.
Hard scientist all the way through.
He thought it was irrelevant. And even at my proposal defense, one of the students who was like a planetary geologist type thing also told me my topic was irrelevant at the defense.
Well, at my proposal defense at Golden Gate University in San Francisco, and I wanted to do it on expanding space commerce and space tourism, they thought it was a total joke, and they laughed it off in front of me. But I went in really stacking this against the school because I was allowed to have advisors from different schools. So I got Dr. Bruce Lucinian from Stanford's Small Satellite Department to endorse me and to be one of my advisors. And I got a top guy, Dr. Harvey Willenberg, who you've heard on this show many times, who was at the time Boeing and in their commercial space division, and saying that this was relevant, important, and they were willing to back me totally as academic advisors. And I won my proposal defense by one vote. And the reason that one vote went through was because the person who voted for me, who couldn't care less about space and also thought it was foolish, did not think he was in a position to second-guess a Stanford professor and a top guy in Boeing management with a PhD from Indiana in nuclear engineering who was working commercial space for Boeing. Had I not come in with that kind of a committee, I would have been turned down on my dissertation as well. So, and then when I finally finished my dissertation in 2001 and space tourism was much more mainstream and there were pictures coming back from Mars from Global Surveyor, they toasted me with a champagne party and all the guys who voted against me were there and said they were really thrilled that they did not stop me, that they were unsuccessful. And they were now claiming that they had the cutting edge PhD student on space tourism and space business in the entire country, because at the time my dissertation was the cutting edge on that because nobody else was doing it. I think there have been several more since then. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and you really do need to fight back when you want to do these things and stack your committee or get your evidence to address their concerns that these topics are irrelevant, because they will use academia to smother you into being their little clones.
Exactly.
Mel, go ahead.
I think the fact that we even have these sessions at the AAA conference is, you know, a big step in the right direction, though. Because, I think 10 years ago, they probably would have laughed at something called astrosociology. And, you know, at this point in time, they're allowing it. You know, it took some work on my part to get it organized. It finally came through, and I think that it's a testament to the fact that we're moving in the right direction.
Here's a comment from chat from Andy. I'm in full agreement with you, David, that the lack of scientific interest and literacy in our culture is irrational and worrying. You can entertain almost anybody with some silly romantic comedy for an hour or two, but talk about science or space, and it becomes too much for their minds to hold. The concepts are too grand, but this is why I love the space show. So, Andy, you made my day and the day of our two guests as well. Thank you very much for your comments. Mel, it's a challenge for you because, you know what, you can go get a PhD in sociology and do a specialty subset, for example, or in anthropology, and you can come back and try to teach at Space Studies in North Dakota if you can take the weather.
I can't take the weather.
Well, then you got to do it at some other place. When I go to SmallSat, there are probably 24 universities there doing CubeSats or SmallSats or some technical thing. I know they're heavy-duty engineering courses, but you know what? This subject needs to be taught in to engineers. And this would be a huge, big challenge for you to come into these departments. And you'd probably be the only social scientist there in an engineering school. But these students need to have a touch of liberal arts, a touch of humanity, a touch of literature and culture in their education. And they're not getting it, especially if they've studied engineering from the bachelor's level on, because their humanities and social science and art and culture requirements are probably at a minimum. So, Mel, this is your challenge and your opportunity to really make a huge difference in moving forward to being spacefaring and balance out some engineers that will end up at NASA, JPL, Boeing, maybe X-Corps, maybe some of the smaller companies. You've got some awesome opportunity ahead of you.
Thank you, and I know I have been trying. Like, I did I probably haven't told you all the details about the various PhD applications I've sent out, but I do try, and I have applied to a lot of places, but, you know, I can't do a dissertation on astrosociology if nobody will accept me into their department, because I'm too, quote-unquote, weird. One person called me, quote-unquote, eccentric. I'm not entirely sure why, but... So.
Well, here's what you do. You get the degree, and as soon as you get the degree from a reputable accredited institution, you're free to make your name any way you want. So if you have your degree in anthropology or sociology, even though if you've had to do mainstream stuff, once you're out, your ability to publish in journals and do the kinds of things that Jim is doing and elsewhere is based solely upon your ability. And I know you can publish a good article because you did that in my class. And the John who sent in the chat question a little while ago about Vadim is the John that helped me review your paper for Human Factors so that you could publish it in AIAA. I didn't tell that to the listeners, but she turned in a paper for her term paper, which was an amazing paper. It was outstanding. I sent it to Dr. Jurist, who is a human factor specialist far more than me, to make sure that her, you know, T's were crossed and I's were dotted in her human factors concepts and presentation, and they were. And then we encouraged her, and she got it on her own initiative, printed in the peered AIAA journal.
I don't think it was AIAA. It was Advances in Space Research out of COSPAR.
I thought it was one of their... I thought the AIA printed it as well.
As far as I know, it's just out of the Advances in Space Research, and it said it was copyrighted by COSPAR, so...
Okay, well, you know, you can do that, so...
I read that paper, by the way, so...
Well, what I'm saying is you get the degree, and sometimes you just have to play the game because academia is a game, as Jim well knows. But once you get out and you have the PhD and you have the accreditation of the school behind you, you're totally free to publish and pursue and learn whatever it is that you want to go for. And if you can get in teaching these subjects to... you know, into space engineering or space studies programs around the country, I think you make a huge difference and a huge contribution.
Well, that's what I've been trying for. And I'll be trying again for PhD application round 3.
When you talk to AIAA about the scholarship, the information I sent you, talk to them about their what they say about... you know, their PhD assistants and programs. I know it's probably geared for engineering, but they're a pretty open-minded organization. You know, their Jim is getting more and more stuff accepted, and everything Jim submits is peer-reviewed to get it into there. You can't just say, I want to talk about this, and then you're given a slot. You have to be approved by referees, right, Jim?
Yeah, they're peer-reviewed.
So
you know, actually, it depends. Is to different extents depending on what the process is at the conference.
Well, you're probably the best referee for your topic, but I'm sure they have others referee it before you. You just can't get in willy-nilly that you're going to get to present this and have a whole track dedicated to it from 10 in the morning to 6 in the afternoon.
Yeah, they don't want a bunch of...
You know, this is not your normal advocate type of conference by any means whatsoever. I'm hoping, Mel, you'll be able to get out there and that you can participate in this conference. But Jim, do you have other students involved with you in the astrosociology session, or are they all grown-ups, for lack of a better term?
I think in this particular situation, they're all adults. But part of the problem is, we've talked about this in the past, is the high cost of conferences. If it's not the registration fee, it's the airline fees and the hotel and everything else that goes with it.
Right, everything, yeah.
Yeah, so, that's why I'd like to, at some point in the future, develop something like an Astrosociology Institute, which in part will fund student projects, participation in conferences, even contests at the website, and try to get students involved in things that are not only interesting to them, but also hopefully will lead to something in the future in terms of something in academia they can pursue.
Here's a question for both of you. This is from Don by email in Ogden, Utah. And he says, Dr. Livingston frequently talks on the Space Show about the findings of the DITMAR report by DITMAR Associates, which were released at the end of 2006. I'm not familiar if either of you know about this report or its conclusions, but specifically focus your attention on what the DITMAR group found about the youth ages 18 to 25 or 30 in terms of their interest in the space program, the vision for space exploration, and going on to Mars. It's actually not a good finding, especially in terms of younger people who think about or want to do anything with Mars. They hardly register on the scale. It's very surprising. It seems to me that if the real outreach for space, for the vision for space exploration, is engineering and science-oriented all the time, to the exclusion of most everything else, it's going to be very hard to connect with younger people because not everybody takes the hard academic courses for math, engineering, and science, as we've been talking about today. However, in the absence of what you're talking about, liberal arts, astrosociology, connecting in, I would see nothing changing. But what do you think, if you can find a way to take your message to the 18 to 25 or 30 group, the disenfranchised, as reported by Dr. DITMAR, don't you think that your message would turn this group around or make a significant inroad statistically into their being much more supportive of the vision going to the moon and even going to Mars? I think you may be the missing link. Please comment.
Well, I'm 26. So I am in that age group, and I do. And while most of my friends are not hard science people at all, but most of them do have at least some interest in the in space, and all of them seem to be absolutely fascinated with all the research I do. So I don't know the report. I cannot speak on the findings because I haven't read it. But it could be. Maybe my friends are all biased, but a lot of them do support at least somewhat the space program.
She asked very specific questions about it. It's actually a very, very good market research program. Google DITMAR, DITTMAR Associates. This goes for listeners, too, if you're not familiar with it. A summary of the full report is on her website. The full report costs $70. But the addendum on the youth findings, 18 to 25 or slightly more than that, that is a downloadable document off of her website. I think it's about 7 or 8 pages long. And you can actually see what she's talking about, the questions that were asked. And in my opinion, she did a really, really outstanding market survey. So I would suggest you go to Dittmar Associates' website, Google it. I don't remember the URL. Mary Lynn has been a guest on the show. I guess I should bring her back on. She'll probably be at the AIAA meetings as well. Jim, are you familiar with these reports?
Vaguely. I've heard of some of the findings. But I think that one thing that we need to keep in mind is that our culture, in terms of, you know, interest in space or what have you, we don't place a high value in that, but we haven't even attempted to bring space into the social science classroom. And, you know, my argument is that if space can motivate engineers and mathematicians and so on, why can't it do the same for social scientists or social science students? So, you know, this whole idea of my idea of extending the STEM model to include astrosociology is this idea of bringing space into the social science classroom and getting people who are interested in space from a social scientific perspective can actually pursue something, you know, or, you know, at least at this point in time, participate in the development of astrosociology. I'm not surprised by the findings, but I think there's something that can be changed.
Who is actually responsible for bringing this into the social science classroom? Is it the existing space community, which comprises everybody? Is it only the sociologist among us? Is it NASA? I mean, how do we do this? Whose responsibility is it to carry this message? And then how do we target those that we think are responsible for carrying this message?
It's a multi-tiered procedure that we need to be involved in. We need the space community to be involved. We need the social sciences to be involved. We need to engage the public. For example, you know, you can have an intro to astrosociology course in the sociology department, but you can also have the same course in the in an astronomy department. And both, you know, intro to astronomy, if anybody's taken that course, has a component that looks at, you know, the cultural ramifications of space and so on. Well, that can be actually brought into an astrosociology course because that's part of it, but also go further than that and look at it from a more broad perspective, which, you know, is now being termed astrosociology. So, you know, students can not only pursue astrosociology or be informed about it so they can look at those issues when they do their research, even as engineers, but they can actually be encouraged to go in that direction if they find that more interesting than astronomy or whatever they're starting off in.
Bill has a question for either of you in San Diego. And Bill says, my hunch is that people do liberal arts and sociology because they're not good in math or the sciences or engineering. Thus, obviously, they would have a different take on the importance of their discipline. From your perspective and being in the field, especially you, Jim, since you have a PhD in sociology, is it a field that is refuge for people who can't do math and science? Or am I wrong in my assuming this status for those people studying the liberal arts?
Well, you know, we don't necessarily do the same kinds of types of math. We don't do the same kinds of theoretical work and, you know, using the same notations and formulas and so on. But at the same time, sociology, for example, developed a lot of the statistics that are used in economics and other areas. So there's math involved and statistics involved in the social sciences, and, you know, I don't subscribe to the idea that social scientists are people that are bad at math. You know, that may be true for some, but not everybody. Some people just really have an interest in the social science perspective as opposed to, you know, an engineering perspective or whatever, and I think they pursue their interest.
Absolutely, and I do know that your involvement in statistical analysis and some of the advanced things you do in the studies in sociology and in liberal arts require an enormous amount of sophisticated computer and analytical skills, plus being able to conclude and analyze that data. So, yeah, it's different kinds of math than hard science and engineering uses, but there still is a need to understand these disciplines and know what you're doing with them.
And, you know, one thing to look at is the idea, you know, even with the so-called hard sciences or the natural sciences and physical sciences on Earth, if we don't even consider space, the social sciences developed in order to understand human behavior on Earth. Now, if that's important on Earth, if we have people living in space, why wouldn't it be just as important in space as it is on Earth? You're going to have the same individuals, same types of. We're going to have the same species, in space. And initially, especially, we're going to bring all our cultural and social baggage with us, psychological baggage, and so on. So we're going to have to understand human behavior in space, just as we have to understand it on Earth.
Especially for settlements and long-term spaceflight.
Exactly.
Mel, here's a question for you. This is from June in Portland, Oregon, and said, Mel, when you get your PhD, if you had the chance to do live research on a space mission or a space settlement that might take you into space for several months to a couple of years, like a Mars trip, would you be willing to go to do that type of sociological research?
That's a good question. My primary fear is I'm a little claustrophobic, so I don't think putting me necessarily in a capsule and shooting me off to God knows where is really intelligent, because I might have psychological issues.
Where do you put the helmet on for the spacesuit if you think you're going to have issues in a capsule?
you're going to have to keep me in a drug-induced coma or something, because I don't like. I don't even sit on the inside when you go to a restaurant and the inside part of the booth, because I'm super claustrophobic. But I would love to do some live research, just I don't particularly want to scare myself to death going to see my subjects. So basically I would if I weren't too scared, if I weren't as scared as I am.
Okay, Jim, would you do it?
It's a possibility, you know. Even if I didn't go or Mel doesn't go, I think the idea here is that we need to send social scientists into space if we're going to have, for example, if we're going to create a space settlement. We're actually creating a society, a mini society or a space society of sorts, and we need to make sure that society is viable and that we have the social structures in place and that everything is, you know, operating as properly as possible. You know, what are we going to do when somebody commits a crime in space?
Push them out the airlock.
Good idea.
Yeah, well, we don't tend to be that cruel, you know. So I think we have to develop some kind of mechanism for dealing with that. And that is not engineering. That is social science. And so we need to send and have social scientists study those types of societies as well as we do on Earth. You know, it's the same principle that human behavior, you know, people talk about the hard sciences and the social sciences. I'm sure you've heard, a lot of you have heard the idea that the social sciences are really the harder sciences because human behavior is so variable compared to physics and other types of research. So I think that, we have less room for errors and making judgments in space. And so it becomes even more important for social scientists or astrosociologists to be involved.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be showing my ignorance here. Has an astronaut that has been a sociologist or a cosmonaut that has been one ever gone up into space that either of you are aware of?
It is my understanding, if you look at the NASA website, and on basically how to be an astronaut section, you have to have a degree in some certain, some pretty specific things, Last I checked, sociology, anthropology, those guys were not on that list. So I don't. Yeah. I would be really surprised if anyone did. Maybe they had a double major at you know, bachelor's or something, but that's not how they got chosen. So I would be really surprised if anyone actually, you know, went up there and was a sociologist or something.
Was a lawyer on the list?
I have no idea. I don't remember.
Boy, that'll say something if a lawyer ranks above a sociologist and gets to go to space.
I know MDs are on the list in a whole bunch of normal STEM, you know, subjects are there.
Natural and physical sciences are listed, but yeah, I'm not aware of anybody either. And I don't think there's plans for that at this point either.
Okay, John in Montana has this comment for listeners as well as you both. Thank you, John. So far, very few people, all highly selected and screened, have traveled into space. Still, there have been episodes of disharmony with a larger, more generic population going into space. Problems of law enforcement, etc., become credible. Could it be that there is little interest in this topic because people tend to extrapolate from the highly selected, can-do, right-stuff types of people instead of extrapolating from a more general population? And I probably agree with that, John, but then again, we had the astronaut on active flight duty status who had been to space and was about to go again, go berserk between Houston and Orlando. So the right stuff is not always the right stuff with the right stress points. Jim or Mel?
It's, you know, the right stuff is a standard that human beings, you know, have a hard time meeting. So, you know, we don't see a lot of the background stuff that goes on. We just see the facade of the astronauts getting into the capsule, into the space shuttle, or in the passing of the capsule. So I think that there's no way that the people that you send into space in terms of large numbers are going to be able to fit that mold or even come close to it. So, you know, if you see the problems with the astronauts, you know, you can just generalize to the more general population and see that there's going to be more issues that arise, you know, a lot of deviance of various forms, not just crimes, but other forms of deviance that are intolerable to some people and may cause conflict and so on. So, you know, it's something you have to put, my idea is that you have to put the social structures into place. You know, you have to have the semblance of some kind of government, some kind of economic system, some type of family structure, some type of, you know, different systems or different institutions in place in order for space. That's why I call it a space society, in order for it to survive over time, to function over time, and for the people to survive in it, you need to have structure there.
Mel, any comment on that?
I don't have. I think Jim did a fairly good job with what he said. So.
We're in excess of the time for the show, and I've kept you both on long past even the makeup time for when we were suffering through phone line problems. Each of you, I guess starting with Jim, do you have any concluding or final comments and pearls of wisdom that you would like to leave with listeners? And do you each want to put out an email address for others to contact you, offer comments and questions, ideas, suggestions, or do you want them to go through me? So, Jim, you lead off.
Okay. People can contact me at jpath@astrosociology.com. And I just want to let you know that there are astrosociology papers available on the virtual library page. And there's also a calendar that shows the upcoming conferences on the calendar or history page. And the links to that are on the first homepage and also on the virtual community page. In terms of my concluding remarks, I'd like to say that social scientists are going to be needed in the future for space exploration to be successful. You know, in the past, we've been able to get away with excluding the social sciences for the most part. But if we're really going to go into space, and humanity is going to take over much more for the machines that we send into space, then we're going to need something like astrosociology to be in place. And, you know, the interesting thing is I think more and more engineers, architects, and space scientists are starting to recognize the connection between space exploration and humanity, in terms of space flight, of course, but also in terms of how space exploration on Earth, you know, is involved. We have to remember that most people being affected by space are on Earth and not in space yet. So we need to study those effects. One reason is that we can maximize them for our benefit if we know what they are. Even space research helps us as a society. It helps our culture, you know, the findings from the rovers on Mars and so on, and astronomy and so on. That knowledge feeds into our culture and has an effect on it. So I think, you know, obviously my perspective is that astrosociology must be developed in order for us to pursue space exploration in the future. And that's what I'm going to be doing in the next few years.
Okay. Mel, want to give out an email address or have them go through me? And what would be your concluding comments?
Well, first of all, I'll have them go through you because I have so many email addresses I don't usually check them all. And half the time, if I don't recognize somebody's name, I trash it without reading it. And I'm also easy to find on many social networking sites. So trust me, I am available even if you don't go through email. I'd primarily like to talk to students. There is currently not that much, unfortunately, available in astrosociology, but there never will be unless you start talking to your professors. You know, ask them, you know, if you're going to do an independent project, something like that, ask a professor if you could do it on a more astrosociological topic. At least try to go through and get your theses approved. Try to spread word that there are these issues that do need to be discussed. And hopefully, if you talk to enough professors, or really just anybody, this will raise up the astrosociology, and we might eventually be able to have, you know, good programs, PhD programs, master's programs, undergraduate programs in this subject. But if nobody's heard of us and the students aren't interested, we're never going to have a program to call our own. And we're always going to be, you know, wondering what do we do in order to enter into this industry, into this field.
Okay.
So,
Listeners, if you are going to make it to Space 2007 in Long Beach, September 18th through the 20th, make sure you find Jim Past, Dr. Jim Past. Look for him at that session that we're talking about. Make sure you find me. I'm easy to find. I'm wearing space show shirts usually, and so I'm probably the only one there doing that. And make sure you find us and look us up and come sit in all or part of the astrosociological sessions and be part of helping to move space development and our efforts to be spacefaring forward. And one last comment before I close today and say thank you to our guests is remember adventure and pilot Steve Fawcett is still missing, and you can use your computer to help find him. Check it out at www.stevefossett.com, stevefossett.com. There's information there on how to do it, or the Amazon page, www.mturk.com. We thank Andy for giving us this information, and you know, the more people that can participate in the search, the better chances are that he can be found and he'll be okay. And we're all hoping that for himself and his family. So, Mel and Jim, I want to thank you very much for being on the space show today. I appreciate it. Jim, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the conference for sure at your sessions, and roaming around the hallways and such. I'm doing a space show tape recording set of interviews, and I want to include you in it. So for sure I need to sit down with you for half an hour or so at some point during the conference. Mel, if you do get a scholarship and you do end up going out there, make sure you let us know, and we'll look forward to seeing you.
And Ben, if you ever want to do an interview with me, maybe we won't have nearly as much static on the line.
Well, now we'll know how to counter the phone lines. Maybe a good interview would be with you and Vadim. Maybe he'll feel more comfortable coming back on the show with company. Listeners, that's it for today. I want to thank you for staying for the full length of this program and for enduring our little telephone technological break. On behalf of Mel Marsh, as well as Dr. Jim Pass and myself, I want to thank you. Remember, check the newsletter, because if I am able to get Bill Pullman on the show, it will likely be this week. And that will show up on the website newsletter, and it probably won't be a very long interview, probably half an hour or something like that, but it may be time for a couple of listeners to ask him a question or something, and damn it, if you ask him about Sleepless in Seattle, I'm going to hit the kill button. It's just not going to happen on the space show. Listeners, thank you very much for tuning in today, and again, Jim and Mel, great show. I appreciate it. Goodbye, everybody, until tomorrow, Monday, on the Space Show.